Hi, everybody. This is Brad with the United Way of Columbia and Greene Counties. You are listening to WGXC ACRA, Columbia and Greene Counties, 90.7 on the dial.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Christopher Lee Brothers Plumbing and Heating of Albany, wishing everyone a joyous holiday season and happy new year. Red Carpet Service and Solutions since 1939. Information at CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Tamara Sahai-Kevich in Lebanon, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Happiness is like a bird with 20 wings. Try to catch him as he flies. Happiness is like a bird that only sings when his head is in the skies. You can try to make him walk beside you. You can say the door is open wide. If you grab at him, woe betide you. I know because I've tried. Like a butterfly upon an April morning, very quickly taking fright. Happiness is come and gone without a warning. Jack-o'-lantern in the night. I will follow him across the meadow. I will follow him across the hill. And if I can catch him, I will try to bring you. Why, yes, happiness. If I can catch him, I will try.
You're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. And this program is Bequency, and my name is Mayuko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our own neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a free-form mix of sound made by birds and humans inspired by birds. And I want to mention that here at WGXC, we are in the middle of the Winter 2024 Lucky 13 on-air pledge drive, which runs through the end of this month. It's Lucky 13 because this is WGXC's 13th anniversary on FM Airwave. And on this radio show, Bequency, I've been speaking with local birders and introducing what they do in our own communities here in the Hudson Valley to our listeners. And this is all possible because of listeners like you supporting our radio station, WGXC. The fundraiser goal is $5,000 in recurring monthly donations. And we are right now at a little above $4,000, $4,171. So that's pretty close. So please help us reach this goal by becoming a monthly supporter that can be started from only $5 a month. You can join the force by going to our website at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org/donate. Or call us at the phone number 518-697-7400. 518-697-7400. We started today's show with a song called Happiness by English poet and musician Molly Drake that was recorded in the 1950s. She was also Nick Drake's mom, so she had a, you know, pretty huge contribution to the history of music. And now we are going to listen to my interview with Drew Hopkins. Drew is an environmental educator and project coordinator at the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Drew is leading the Allen DeVoe Bird Club's strike search in Kinderhook on March 2nd, which is next Saturday. And so he'll tell us about Northern Shrike. That's what we're going to search. It's a cute little bird with some brutal hunting behavior. And he also shares the joy of nurturing students' curiosity in wildlife through programs that he facilitates at the Five Rivers Environmental Education Center in Albany. And also we're going to hear about his unique way of approaching Big Ear, which is a personal challenge among birders to see as many species as possible within a calendar year. So without further ado, let's listen to the interview. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bequency.
My name is Drew Hopkins, and I am a 20-year resident of Hudson, New York. I originally came from Greene County, living in Catskill and Carroll, a proud graduate of Carroll-Durham High School and Columbia Greene Community College.
Carroll, you said?
Carroll, yeah.
Carroll, that's how you pronounce.
Yes, I know. Lots of people, we used to know whether or not people were local or not by how they pronounced Carroll.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I've been saying Cairo since Carroll. Okay. So now you live in Hudson.
Yes.
And so you're a Columbia County resident, and therefore you are a member of Allen DeVoe Bird Club.
Yes, I love the Allen DeVoe Bird Club, and I've been leading programs and bird walks with them for about 15 years now.
But so I suppose you had been a birder since before the Hudson time.
Yeah, I became a birder kind of back in high school, but I was the only person I knew who liked birds.
Oh.
So I had a field guide, and I tried to learn how to identify the birds, which I found to be very difficult and daunting. But I went to Columbia Greene Community College.
Oh.
And another Allen DeVoe Bird Club member, Dr. Bill Cook, was a professor of biology, and he also taught a number of classes with birds involved in them. And so we connected and started going out doing Christmas bird counts and other kinds of things. And he really helped me learn birds and where to find them. Mm-hmm. And it was very exciting. So I'm exceptionally glad that I went to Columbia Green.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's actually great to hear that because I just interviewed Bill Cook for the January episode, and this interview will air in February.
Excellent.
So it makes a good, you know, continuing narrative here. Okay, so the Shrike Search, I wanted to ask you about the Shrike Search, which is another event of the Allendale Bird Club, happening on March 2nd, and you're leading this walk.
Right. The Shrike Search happens at 9 o'clock at Lindenwald, which is located on Route 9H, just south of Kinderhook. And we'll meet there and go out to Ikey Bush Road, which is a few miles away. And we'll be looking for shrike there.
Ikey Bush. Another
name that's hard to pronounce, starts with an E.
Right, so it's happening in Ikey Bush. So you're leading this walk. And I wanted to ask you about, since this show is geared towards the beginner birders also, some people might not be familiar with what shrike is, which I wasn't either for a long time. So could you tell us what is it in the first place and what's special about it?
Shrikes are awesome birds. They are winter visitors in this area. They spend their summers way, way up north on the Arctic coast. So they live up on the tundra from Alaska all the way to over to Newfoundland and Labrador. So they are really, really friends with polar bears. Mm-hmm. I won't say that, but they live in the same habitat. And then they come down here during the winter time, and they like really brushy areas. They're small birds. They're about the size of a large robin or a small blue jay. And they're all gray with black masks. They look a little bit like our mockingbirds. The thing that's most amazing about them is that although they're songbirds, they're not known at all for their songs. What they're known for is catching small mammals, small birds, and large insects. And when they catch them, they have a special hook on their beak that they either bite the back of their neck to sever their spine, or they fly up with them and fly down onto barbed wire or sharp thorns and impale their prey. And in times of plenty, they will actually leave animals impaled on those shrubs on barbed wire fences and come back. And it's kind of like a pantry. Mm-hmm. So when they can't get food, they go back to where they have food. And then they've got food there that they captured earlier.
I mean, it's pretty, sounds psycho. It's kind of a cute looking little bird.
It's a beautiful little bird.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about northern shrike or?
Yeah, there are two species of shrike in North America. There's northern shrike and loggerhead shrike. And mm-hmm. loggerhead shrike live down south. They live across the southern U.S. But we're talking about the northern shrike, which lives, as I mentioned, all the way up during the summer, up along the Arctic Ocean, and then comes down here to visit us in the winter in small numbers.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the shrike that we're going to search.
Now, we are going to search for it. As I said, it comes down in small numbers, uh-huh. so the likelihood that we're going to see one is not great, but we have seen them before, so we continue to look because one of the great things about birding is you never know what you're going to find.
True.
And sometimes, if it's not a shrike, it could be something else equally as exciting.
But the reason why we scheduled this in March is that is there more likely that they're around mm-hmm. in March?
Yeah, a lot of the food sources up north are covered under ice and hard frost. And so, and there are certainly no insects out at that time of year up mm-hmm. north. So they come south looking for food. And as food dwindles, they continue to move south. They'll only come as far south as they need to find food. So hopefully, not so much for them, but for us, they've run out of food sources up north. And they've come down here to try and find some mice and small birds in our area.
Mm. I wonder if they remember where they keep their prey like you said, that the pantry thing?
Yeah, they choose a single spot, and they'll put all their stuff in a single spot so they can remember it.
I see.
A little different than blue jays that can spread, can hide 10,000 acorns in a forest all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They really have to remember all kinds of stuff. The shrikes are, in my mind, they're a little more practical. They put everything together.
That's what I would do, too. But I guess blue jays are kind of smart because they're crow.
They are corvids. They are related to crows and ravens. They are one of the smartest groups of birds.
So maybe they can remember where it is. So people can find information on this shrike search on the website www.allendevoebirdclub.org. And do they need to register? Can they just show up at the meetup location?
There's no need to register. Just show up there at 9 o'clock.
Okay, great. So that's what's happening. And we're doing this interview in January, and you'll be back in March. And in the meantime, in between those times, you're about to leave for your big ear trip. And the way you do it is different from many other birders. Could you tell us how you do it?
Sure. Well, for those of you who are not familiar with big ears are, in the course of a year, people take a geographic area and they try and find as many birds as they can in that geographic area. Some people do the United States, some people do the contiguous 48 states, some people do all of North America, and a few people are crazy enough to try the whole world. I am not that crazy, and I have a career and a family, so I can't just run off for a year jet-setting around the planet. But what I can do is each month I go out and do a big month. Now, my big year consists of going out 1 month a year. So last year I started with January. This year I'm on to February. And so for the month of February, I will be traveling around North America trying to find the largest number of species that I can.
In one month. How many stops are you making?
Because I'm also working at the same time.
Okay.
Yes, that's a little different.
You're not taking a break.
No, I'm taking some time off, but I'm not taking the whole month off.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I am doing is I'm going to head down February 1st to the lower Rio Grande Valley, and I'll be down there for till the 11th, and then I'll be back at work that Monday. And then on the 24th, I will be headed to Zaxim Bog, which is in Minnesota, and hopefully I've convinced my daughter to join me for that. So that should be really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered the coldest place in the continental U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, yeah, we're not going there for long, are we, Dad? I said, no, we're just going to be there for a couple days. We just have to freeze for a couple days.
And you're flying in between.
We are going to be flying mainly because of time.
Right.
So those are the two big trips, you know, in doing this. I have to say that I would do more, but yeah, with working, it's just not possible. And to be honest, you get really tired when you're up every morning before dawn and going all day long and then
mm-hmm.
at night trying to figure out where you're going the next day.
I would imagine. When you return, you need a vacation from the mid-year trip, or big month, rather. Yeah, Chris Franks mentioned this is how you do it, and he thought it would be interesting to ask you about this because it's such a different way of doing the big year. And a lot of people must be thinking, you know, I can't do it because, like you said, I have a job, I have a family, I have obligation.
Well, that's exactly what I said to Chris. I was saying, you know, I love the idea of doing a big year, and I would put it on my bucket list
mm-hmm.
if I could, but there's just not going to be a time in my life where I'm just going to be able to go off for a year and watch birds. And so Chris said, well, what do you think about a month at a time?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's...
So he suggested.
He suggested it. I thought my wife would think it was a terrible idea,
okay.
And I was like, oh, no. But I mentioned it to her anyway, and she said, yeah, absolutely, go ahead.
Oh, wonderful.
And I was lucky enough to talk with my boss, and she said, yeah, I think we can arrange something. so that you make this possible for you to do it. So it's been fantastic.
That's very nice. So your boss is understanding, your wife is understanding, your colleagues are accommodating your...
Yes.
This is Frequency on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you're just joining us, we are listening to my interview with Drew Hopkins, an environmental educator and project coordinator at the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation.
So speaking of those bosses, and those are the people of Five Rivers Environmental Education Center. That's where you currently work at.
Yeah, I work for the New York State DEC. Five Rivers Environmental Education Center is a 400-acre center with a visitor center just outside of Albany in Delmar, New York. So it's not too far from Greenville, about 15 minutes north of Greenville. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place. We do education for everyone, everybody from preschoolers and preschool groups up to college students and retirees. And it's a fantastic place. We've got over 10 miles of trails. The property is open every day, 365 days a year from sunrise to sunset. And the visitor center is open Monday through Saturday from 9 o'clock to 4:30.
So people can come and explore on their own, or they can participate in like workshops and such?
Absolutely. We've got a variety of things. We've got every Saturday we run public programs, and those public programs are all free. To find that out, you can look up DEC Five Rivers in Google and just ask, pop up for the calendar. That will give you a list of all of our events. And along with that, we have usually, we do a variety of things during the week. We have after school programs. We also, during the week, have lots of school groups that come in. A large majority of our folks visiting during the week are our students from all the local school districts.
And what is your role? Do you interact with these students yourself directly, or you're more of an admin person?
Sometimes I'm lucky enough to be able to go out with them and to be an instructor. My role is also that of my background is in education, so I work with training educators and going into colleges and providing training for their pre-service teachers. I do professional development for teachers, especially during the summer. We do 3-day professional development programs. And I'm also in charge of New York State's Project Wild and Project Wet. I'm a co-coordinator for that. Mm-hmm. So those are two curriculums that are focused on bringing students outdoors and learning about the environment.
So the professional training is kind of like you train teachers to teach their students about wildlife and nature.
Yes, that's exactly what I do.
So a lot of times you work with adults, but also you have a chance to go out with kids.
Yep, that's what I do. I spend most of my time with adults, but then again, like I said, I get lucky every now and then and go out with a group of kids and look under rocks and streams, or look through the grass in the meadows and find all kinds of neat stuff and explore the world with them.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine, why wouldn't kids be excited about, you know, seeing stuff like that? But then again, it's such a time of, you know, smartphones and lots of stimulation coming from the digital world. I have wondered, like, how does that affect, like, say, attention span of kids? You know, have you noticed anything over the course of your career working with the kids?
In terms of going outdoors are kind of the original attention getters. When you flip over a rock and find a crayfish or a minnow hiding underneath it or anything else, that immediately grabs their attention, and they are paying attention 100% to that, and they're not thinking about texting their friends or anything like that. They're just into the moment, and excited. And I think kids innately have a sense of wonder, and that is really brought out when they go outside and look at things, especially things that, you know, we drive by fields or see fields and things like that all the time, or see woods, but going out into the woods and really taking an in-depth look at them, discover all the kinds of things that are really going on, and they are very excited about that.
What about when the theme is birding? Because birds sometimes don't appear, and it takes patience sometimes.
True. And we do have a class that we offer that's on birds. And what I find is that most of the time, it's a fantastic class. We don't dwell on bird identification, because that's not nearly so important as what are the birds doing, and what are they doing in their habitat where they live, and why are they doing what they're doing? And so we look at, we spend a lot of time noticing. And so every time we see a bird, we flap our arms, and every time we point in the direction that it's at, and if it's feeding, we make a feeding motion and point at it. And so the whole group gets cued into not. Verbals, and they're paying attention the entire time. So anytime anything pops up, they're talking about that. And in between, when we may not be looking at a bird, we've got things like feathers to explore, and bird beaks and nests and those kinds of things. So there's always a lot for them to do. And even though it's a two-hour lesson, I have yet to see a kid not pay attention or be excited at the end of the 2 hours.
Students
are really into it.
That's really wonderful. What I have learned, I think, is that to go watch birds or to find birds is not just about looking for birds, but to learn like what exactly what you said, like what they eat and what their behavior, like knowing those information surrounding bird gives you more clue as to like where should I go, where in this landscape I should look to find any particular kind of birds. And I finally started to feel that I've gained that sense of that kind of, you know, where to look.
Yeah, birds are particular in terms of their habitats. I often tell the students, explain, you know, that they live in their habitat, and sometimes you can find them in certain places, a lot like when they're at school. There are certain times of the day where you would expect to find students in certain places based on what it was they were doing. You know, if it was time for PE class, you may want to look outside. You may want to look in the gym. In between classes, they'll be migrating through the hallways. Or, of course, they'll be feeding in the cafeteria at certain times of the day. And so it just like people, you know, they move around a habitat, but usually they have a specific reason for being in the place that they are. And once you kind of understand that, then they're much easier to find.
So you have been in the field of education, and then you sort of changed your career a little bit towards the environmental work, combined with education, I suppose. And to take that career change, there was a lot of like people from the local birding community involved in helping you navigating this career change.
Yeah, the local birding community has been absolutely amazing in the support I've gotten from a number of people. I was a middle school science teacher and a school administrator, and I noticed that a civil service exam was coming up for environmental educator, and I do have a master's degree in environmental education. It was what I was originally going to do way back when I was younger. Of course, we all have those ideas of what we're going to do with our life, and then kind of life changes some of that, and we have to go, you know, we go different ways. And so this opportunity opened up, and so I went and took the civil service exam to be an environmental educator. With my background, I was able to do that. And then a position opened at Five Rivers, And it was great because, you know, folks were calling me up saying, hey, did you know that that position is open and, you know, you may want to think about applying for it. And so, you know, they've always been very supportive. And one of the things I need to know for my position is quite a lot of natural history and familiarity with the area. And they take me out. You know, we spend time together and share that information. You know, they're extremely free and happy to share anything that they know. And so we, even though we were mainly going out on bird walks, the topics that we cover are all of natural history and how things have changed over time in the area. And so it's a fabulous thing to have with them.
If you just tuned in, we are listening to my interview with Drew Hopkins, an environmental educator and project coordinator at the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. We are in the winter 2024 on-air press drive here at WGXC, the listener-supported community radio station. Visit wgxc.org/donate. wgxc.org/donate to help us stay on the air. Let's get back to my interview with Drew Hopkins. This is Frequency on WGXC 90.7 FM.
So that's how you came to work at this Five Rivers Environmental Education Center. And I wanted to ask if there was any bird-related programs that center offers that people can participate.
Sure. One Thursday a month, we do early morning bird walks. And they're either at 7:30 or 8 o'clock. That's on our calendar during the 3 months of the winter. Those are during at 8 o'clock, but then the time changes. And so to make sure that we're out when the birds are out the rest of the year, we go out at 7:30. Except in May and September, which are big migration months, we go out every Thursday. Mm. And so... So that's always an opportunity for folks. We also do programs on weekends, and some of those weekend programs are focused on birds. The center happens to have a wonderful owl, a barred owl, named Argo. And so one of our favorite programs is, of course, an owl program, and part of that is Argo comes out and people get to meet Argo, and he thinks that's a hoot. Yes, that's a bad joke. But Argo comes out and is a wonderful, wonderful ambassador for the community, or for the center to meet members of the community, especially young folks. And besides the weekend programs, we also do a winter raptor survey, and that is a community science program. Mm-hmm. Where we go out and we contribute to folks that are also doing the survey in our area. There's one here just starting in Columbia County. There is one that's been ongoing for many years at the Coxsackie Grasslands. And now it's at Five Rivers, and we're even looking at expanding it northward as well to some other grasslands. So... we're out looking for the endangered short-eared owl and the New York State threatened northern harriers, and both of which need large field areas to survive in the winter. So there are also winter visitors like the shrike.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to the winter raptor survey after this interview.
Oh,
that's why I dressed like
excellent,
this. Like
excellent.
As if I came from skiing. Yeah, I'm prepared because to be standing for like an hour and a half.
It does get a little cold. I always tell people you can't overdress for a winter raptor survey, but because when you're out there, you can always take a jacket off, but you can't find one.
Right. Yeah, I'm excited. This is my first time going.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I recently saw the short-eared owl for the first time for me at the, another name that's hard to pronounce, Shuangunk?
Yeah, the Shuangunk.
Shuangunk.
Grasslands.
Went to Shuangunk and saw the short-eared owl and Northern Harrier.
Northern Harrier. Yeah, that's incredible. That's down near SUNY New Paltz, down near New Paltz, and they've got the National Grasslands there. Most people don't know that there's a National Grasslands actually here in the Hudson Valley. And when we think of grasslands, of course, we usually think of the Midwest, you know, the great prairie states. But we do have them here as well. And Schwangos is a great place to go and see all kinds of grassland birds.
Yeah. So I felt like I got a little practice of, you know, how the short-eared owl behave versus how a little different flight pattern from northern area, the way they spirals and stuff. So I felt like I got a little good practice from Schwangunk, and so I can maybe join and do something at the raptor survey.
Excellent. And, you know, and everything that you'll see and record tonight, you know, that goes into a database, and it's part of a database that stretches across to the Midwest. And so there are many, many folks out compiling data, putting it into a database, and really helping scientists and biologists make decisions about habitats, about habitat use, about the status of the different species and how they're doing, and grassland management. So it's important to be out there. So.
Very exciting. And sorry, you said Argo is what kind of owl is Argo?
Argo is a barred owl.
Argo is a barred owl. I recently saw a photo of a friend of Five Rivers owl wearing a little sweater.
Yes.
So is that meant to be Argo?
Yes. Our Friends of Five Rivers, which is the non-for-profit group that supports environmental education at the center, yes, they have small plush toys, the stuffed owls with the sweatshirt on and with the little logo on there. Mm-hmm. And that kind of was, well, it was my idea to create an Argo.
Oh.
And basically something to bring along with you when you travel to various places. And a number of people take them on vacations and things. And they'll take pictures of themselves with their Argo, wherever it is. And so wherever we go, Argo.
Okay. And Argo and his, like, a beaver buddy. He had a beaver with
him. Yep. Yeah. This year, they changed recently to a beaver. So I will be taking the Friends of Five Rivers beaver with me when I go down to the Rio Grande and to the Saxon Bog and take pictures of them with me near some of the welcome signs.
Very nice. Are you on Instagram or something? Can I see the photos somewhere?
The photos are on the Friends of Five Rivers Facebook page.
Okay. But the ones you're going to take with Argo in, well, beaver, in your big ear trip, are they going to post it on the...
Yeah, that'll be printed on or posted on Friends of Five Rivers Facebook page.
Okay, I look forward to it. I kind of really like those guys. Okay, we'll look forward to seeing the photo, and good luck with the trip.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope you have a successful birding.
And I hope you have a wonderful time tonight at your first winter raptor survey.
Yeah, thank you.
So that was my interview with Drew Hopkins. Thanks to Drew for this really fun conversation. I suppose him and the beaver buddy are in the coldest part of this big year trip today. You know, I love the idea of not putting what you want to do in the bucket list, but instead just start now and do it little by little. Anyhow, the Shrike Search in Kinderhook, that's led by Drew, is happening next Saturday, March 2nd, 9 a.m. You can find more information at www.alandevobirdclub.org, or you can just search online for Alan Devo Bird Club. And so that was the interview. Like I mentioned in my first mic break, we're in the winter 2024 on-air pledge drive here at WGXC, which is the mothership of this radio program, Bequency, a radio show about local bird people in the Hudson Valley. And what I find interesting in learning about birders is that these people who love birds have different backgrounds. They belong to different generations, come from different parts of the world, or have different political views and opinions, but still, we meet because we are looking for the same thing. We're all following birds. And because birds don't know any boundaries, our journey of following the birds, also crosses boundaries, I think, both physically and culturally and everything else. And there, that's where we meet. And it feels meaningful to me to talk about birds and birders on the radio wave here at WJXC, because the radio wave also knows no boundaries. You know, radio waves can reach someone far away across the borders. And I grew up in Japan, and I was exposed to news from North Korea all the time. And, you know, how its citizens were really living in a difficult condition, to say the least. But they're still exposed to some pop culture from South Korea and beyond South Korea through radio. And I think maybe now it seems more of a smuggling of USB flash drives and such have become another means for them to, you know, get to know the outside world. And even though that means literally risking their lives, people still are fascinated by things that bring them joy. And I think that's really the power. Or like Japanese people in the post-war period who were exposed to Western pop music through the Far East Network that was broadcasted for the U.S. forces in and around Tokyo. And again, those broadcasts knew no boundaries, and, you know, these things flew into people's lives and minds like birds and inspire changes from within. And I think it's important to keep those things without boundaries to stay afloat, you know, like the birds and radio, especially in this time of conflicts and divisions and everyone staying within their own little circle. Our broadcast is possible because of listeners like you supporting our radio station. And WGXC radio programmers, including myself, are all volunteers. But we still need funds to run the logistics things like, you know, equipments and stuff. Our fundraiser goal is $5,000 in recurring monthly donations. And we are right now at, I checked it again, it got a little bit higher up, above $4,200. And so it's really, I think it's possible that we can get to $5,000 per month. So please help us reach this goal by becoming a monthly supporter that can be started from $5 a month. You can do so or make one-time pledge by going to our website at wgxc.org/donate. Again, it's wgxc.org/donate. Or call us at 518-697-7400. 518-697-7400. And so yeah, thank you for your support, for those of you who's already been supporting. The last person who joined the force didn't put their name on. It says anonymous, so I would like to thank this anonymous person who donated today. I wish you told us your name so I could have thanked you. But anyhow, please join us and this anonymous person to stay these things, keep these things afloat. And now it's time for us to listen to the bird-inspired music of the month. We're going to hear, let's start with another song by Molly Drake and some more music. Thanks for listening. This is Bequency on Wavebombs WGXC.
Sitting sadly in the tree, take my good advice and forget your misery. Your tears are all in vain, and regret can be absurd. Little weaver bird, get weaving. The year is going by and the season's getting on. Don't you think it's time to build yourself a home? She blinked a brilliant eye, I don't even think she heard. Little weaver bird, get weaving. Your children will arrive and expect a downy bed, for everything alive needs a place to lay its head. She looked at me and sighed, but she never said a word. Little weaver bird, get weaving. Oh, I can sympathize with a heart that is distressed, but every bird who's wise will build herself a nest. She looked at me and sighed, then a miracle occurred. The little weaver bird got weaving.
Thank you. Sparrow, come in my door.
Sparrow, Come in My Door by Canadian folk quartet Stranger Still. That's the name of the group. And the track was from their 2023 release, The Songs Which Are. That's the title of the album. Preceding that was Rachel Dadd, a folk musician from Bristol, UK. The song was called Swift. And I believe that was from an album. Let me double check. An album titled Kaleidoscope. Sorry, that was a song from Kaleidoscope. And we heard Sparrow Song by Violet Upham-Smith, a 10-year-old Hudson Valley-based artist. And we started this set with Molly Drake and her song Little Weaver Bird, recorded in 1950s. You're listening to Waveforms WGXC, and this program has been Bequency Meet Bird People in Hudson Valley. And I have been your host, Mayuko. I'm here on 4th Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, so the next time I'll be here is on March 23rd. And for the one last time, please consider helping us stay on the air with the birds. It's WGXC's 13th anniversary on FM airwaves. Become a monthly supporter or make one-time pledge at wgxc.org/donate. wgxc.org/donate. Or call us at 518-697-7400. 518-697-7400. Coming up next here on this WGXC airwaves is the countdown produced by Tom Rowe, counting down 10 new songs, stories, or songs in American Top 40 style. So don't go anywhere. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. It's a gloriously beautiful day here in the Hudson Valley. So have a lovely rest of the weekend and rest in peace, Flacco. Thanks for listening. I hope to see you again next time.